Hello and welcome to Inbound Raleigh. I'm James.
And I'm Jennifer. Today on our show, we're excited to talk about the Wake County Transit Plan. Wait, am I having deja vu? Didn't we just talk about this?
Yeah, I think we did, but this time the voter referendum has passed, and now we need to find out what happens next. Like, how much more am I going to be paying for my $5 case of vanilla Coke, and if it's too much, can I take back my yes vote?
I meant more along the lines of what happens next in the transit plan. Sounds like a good idea, after all. We're going to be paying a half cent extra sales tax starting next year, and hopefully seeing some changes. So let's get to that. To help us figure this out, we're joined today by Tim Gardner and David Eatman. Tim is the Transportation Training and Land Use Planner for Wake County, and David is Raleigh's Transit Administrator. Welcome, Tim and David.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, so were you guys surprised at all the tax passed? Did it divide as you expected?
So for a number of years now, we've been, when we ask about whether or not people feel like it's the right thing to do, invest in transit, we get about 70 to 80% people say, yeah, we want to invest in transit. And then when we ask them, do you want to provide additional funding to do for that, we get around 50-50.
Yeah.
And so that's generally where we were with this, and it was a positive vote in favor of the plan. So it is a very positive thing. It is surprising to see where we're at and the fact that we're, you know, now have additional funding for transit.
Yeah, and looking at a map of how people voted, you could see that it definitely broke down along rural-urban lines. Do you think that's based on the people who are going to actually see the benefit from this plan?
There's definitely some of that, and I think that that's something that we didn't necessarily want to make this investment an easy choice or, you know, we wanted to make the plan the right plan. But, you know, anytime you talk about additional taxes and additional funding, that these are things that are actually, you know, where we're providing money that we could potentially use other ways to a specific purpose. So therefore, you know, we have people that were voting, you know, what they felt was important for this. And, you know, some of the people that are in rural areas, you know, kind of self-select for those type of areas. And they tend to, you know, place a lower value on things like public transportation and whatnot. And so I think that's what you're seeing. When you look at it from a precinct by precinct level, about 25% of all the precincts within Wake County, more than 60% of the people voted against the plan or to not have the tax in place. But what's interesting about that is in those same precincts, 40% of those people still were voting in favor. So you had in those precincts, you had, you know, 600 people voting against, but 400 people voting for. And so we still have a very large challenge to say, now, what does this mean for us to provide transit in this area? Because I think the message out there that this is something that we need to do for the future is what carried the referendum, and now we need to make sure that we're providing the right options for this community, and that's what the plan was about.
You mentioned spending the money on a specific purpose. I think one concern that some people have had is this money definitely going to be spent on transit? You know, if you could address some of the legalities of that, of how the money is required to be spent or what directly is going toward.
Right, so there's a lot of different protections through different elements of the legislation that went in place that said this money needs to be spent on transit. And then as a local government, group of local government agencies, we've provided a lot of other additional protections that say what we're going to do is we're going to be very transparent on and how we're spending this money so that you'll be able to see on an annual basis, here's what was collected, here's where it went, here's what it's going towards, and so you'll be able to see that sort of reporting and know that it is being spent to better transit in this area.
Okay, so where can people check out that report? Is that just the regular Wake County budget, or is there a special site where this is all going to be located?
Right, so there's going to be various places where that's going to be. Right now, we're putting it jointly between what's the website that was the primary for the information for the transit campaign, but the transit plan, which is waketransit.com. That is likely to stay active. And then we also have information on the annual budgets going through the MPO's website, which is the Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Okay. And another question some other people were wondering, when does the tax collection start? Is there a specific date?
So I'll continue on these, you know, these kind of high-level questions from the county's perspective, and we'll get to David on that.
But sure.
We're expecting that the sales tax will be we're going to be requesting the state to send out the advanced letters and whatnot and telling each of the storefronts to basically collect the tax, and that is likely to begin in the April timeframe. So that's when you'll start to see the additional tax on your receipts.
Okay, you say the April timeframe, so it's not just like a specific date at midnight everybody starts doing it. Is it roll out?
There will be a time frame where businesses are notified. This is the time frame.
Okay.
The exact date on that is going to be something that the state is going to tell us, essentially how fast they can get the paperwork. And essentially they have a time frame from when they get the request to when they notify the businesses that this is going to have to be put in place. And then it goes for that. So we'll have that date soon, but I'm not sure we're not exactly sure on that date, the exact date at this point.
Fair enough. So once the tax collection begins, you can't just start spending money, or maybe you can. I guess you have to save up some money. How does that work?
Yeah, so there's two reasons that we're essentially saving up money. One is that we don't actually get, you know, a full year of revenue at any time. We get this stuff on a monthly by monthly basis, and so therefore, you know, you don't spend the money because you don't have the money. The second thing is that we're following the plan, and one of the things that the plan wants to do is to set aside in some monies in early years to make sure that we can meet our long-term commitments.
Okay. And related to that, the current Wake County sales tax is about 2%, and I think that means Wake County residents pay about 6.75% total sales tax. How exactly, like, because I found this a little confusing. So something that's $10, let's say, how much more will that cost?
So the quick answer on that is if it is all taxable. So therefore, it's not groceries, it's not medical, other things that are not
sure.
There's essentially additional $10 of purchase, there will be an additional 5 cents
okay.
of sales
okay,
tax.
So it's literally just
so
a half cent per
your,
dollar.
Your Coke
yeah.
won't cost that much
okay,
more.
Okay, that's
well,
great.
And,
yeah.
and Coke is one of those things, if you go to the grocery store, you'll see that you've got some taxable items and some non-taxable items. I think that that's probably one of those things that is taxable, so
yeah.
more than likely
yeah, yeah.
you'll see that because it's, you know, a...
Luxury,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm sure
you don't need that Coke anyway. Come on,
you got my
you,
teeth, so.
You feel very luxurious when you get
yeah,
that.
Oh, big time.
But in general, one of the things that we want to be very clear on is if people make, you know, $10 extra or $10 of grocery purchases, that will be exempt from the sales tax, just like the many of the other things that we purchased today.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it factored into the existing percentage or if it's literally just half a cent for every dollar that you spend, and that's what it sounds like
right,
on taxable items.
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
And then. We talk a lot about the sales tax because, of course, people are really curious about it. But as we broke down in our show on this, that's not the only source of funding. Can you talk about the specific if there are specific revenue goals for the rest of the funding besides the tax?
Yeah, there's various different places that we are trying to make sure that we have put the you know our right foot forward on investing in transit. So we're going to be we want to be very clear on the fact that there's also going to be vehicle registration fee increases, and then we're going to be using these new local revenues to compete. For other sources out there, primarily state and federal. We're also trying to make sure that we're framing transit from the local perspective in the correct way, and so therefore we have a matching program where we have some of the money set aside to provide a 50% match for some of the communities that aren't providing local transit to participate and join in that when their boards and their public feels like it's the right time to do so. The reason that we have that local match is that we currently have communities like Raleigh, Cary, Wake Forest, that are currently providing support from their tax revenues for the transit services they have today.
Okay. And with those transit services that are existing, is there going to be any expansion in terms of new city or county employees that you guys are going to have to bring on to sort of help with this plan or develop it further?
Well, I'll speak to that very quickly. Certainly, with the expansion of a plan, it's going to take additional resources.
Sure.
But as we move forward through our planning processes, we're actually going to be looking at staffing plans and trying to make really good decisions on how those resources will be allocated. Obviously, we have a number of players with this plan, a number of providers. Again, we just want to make smart decisions, use those dollars wisely, and we'll be making those decisions hopefully up front and well vetted.
James and I, when we'd kind of broken down the plan for people, we talked a bit about the philosophy in terms of balancing ridership with coverage. So now that we've got this tax and things are happening, how does that play out in real life?
Well, again, from my from a city of Raleigh's perspective, you were talking about the urban core earlier. As we look at major corridors, we think about the major elements of the plan, whether that's commuter rail, whether that's BRT. We're looking at those prime travel markets, whether that's cross county, or whether that's our major or strong existing transit service corridors in Raleigh, for example, Capitol Boulevard or New Bern Avenue, South
mm-hmm.
Saunders. So certainly that's those high density and high frequency corridors. But this plan as well, as Tim just mentioned, will have elements for the entire county. We have opportunities for the small towns to participate in services, as well as we'll also have some additional rural service throughout the county as well. So, again, trying to tailor and right-size those services for the areas that they serve.
I think that's one of the things that's really neat about where we're at right now is that the plan that you all went through and it was, you know, publicized and released in December is where we're going, right? And it's basically there's going to be details within there to figure out exactly how it's going on, but we're going to be working through those details. And so the philosophy that was core to it is going to be following through on the implementation. So basically you say, well, how do you balance ridership and coverage? The plan already tells you what our philosophy is on that. And so that when we're looking at, you know, expanding the frequent network, expanding the basic bus network, connecting all the Wake County communities, and then doing the commuter connections to the regional areas, all of that, we already know how the balance works. And so it's mostly the details of the implementation.
Okay. And sort of this is to expand a little bit on what you guys are talking about now, more routes equals more riders equals more money. Do you think more access to transit will lead to more local spending, increasing sort of the tax revenue generated?
Well, certainly I view transit as one of the many modes of transportation. And whenever you increase access to transit, there is going to be economic activity which follows that.
Yeah.
There's employment opportunities, there's retail, a number of opportunities that comes with mobility options. So I guess the short answer is certainly yes.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us to the next kind of section of discussion, which is about buses and onto the plan, you know, in that area. I'm guessing that's going to be one of the first things residents are going to actually see on the streets or maybe bus stops. Can you elaborate on that?
And so the plan, obviously, with as Tim was mentioning earlier, with this plan, we can't just start immediately. We wish we could, but obviously we've got some additional planning. We have to order buses and get capital equipment in place and do the capital planning. But some of the early things that you'll see improvements are additional bus stops. We'll have to purchase rolling stock or buses to put on the street, so additional vehicles. Those are some of the early things. Also, from a service perspective, we'll be able to do some midday and some weekend service improvements to really kick off the plan, some of the early elements. But again, hopefully people understand that it does have to ramp up and it's not like an all-in on day three, unfortunately. So it will take some time, obviously.
Yeah, of course. And so with these new buses, I think a lot of the newer buses that are out there now are going to remain in service. And when, I know you said there's a timetable and it's hard to give a tough estimate or an exact estimate, when are people going to start seeing new buses? Is there going to be any big changes? One of the things that, because I've ridden the bus before, and one thing that always bothered me a little bit is there's only spaces for two bikes in the front of the bus. So is there any other changes to the buses that might be coming that people maybe get excited about? Like, oh, this is, you know, Durham brought out those the green buses a while back. So what are some of the things we can look forward to in terms of new buses?
So our current generation of bus is really, it's a rolling computer, quite honestly.
Yeah.
You know, you can pull it up on your smartphone. It's a talking bus, lets you know major stops for the visually impaired. It's senior and persons with disability friendly by providing ramps. So getting to the point where our entire fleet is at that new higher level, it's going to take a little bit of time. I ordered buses tomorrow, it's between a 12 and 18 month delivery period, depending upon the manufacturer. So it does take some pre-planning. So, yeah. And again, as there are some things that we can do, as I mentioned earlier, on the short, you know, on the short time frame before we get those new vehicles.
Sure.
But certainly once those vehicles start rolling in, we can add those additional services. But as far as new and exciting technology on vehicles, we're always looking for those opportunities. I know that our board has looked at things such as compressed natural gas technologies or whether electric buses may have particular service opportunities within our network. So we're always looking at those opportunities. I don't have anything to share at the moment, but certainly rest assured that we're keeping track of that because bus technology as well as transportation technology in general is changing so quickly.
Yeah, it's got to, especially that 12 to 18 month time frame, things might change so much in a year. It's really got to think about it.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we definitely want to do, and I think it relates very much to what you all are doing with this podcast, which we really appreciate, is that, you know, some of these things that we're going to be doing in this necessary lag time as the, you know, the funds come up and we roll into different studies and whatnot, is actually having, you know, some of these more community conversations about saying, well, what is it that is going to be neat or, you know, cool about this stuff? We don't want to make it just about, you know, show versus, you know, actually doing something useful for us. But there are certain things, as David's alluding to, that these technologies are evolving. And that's where we want to make sure that we're hitting those things in the way that the community wants to. And so that's one of the things as we circle back around to the, you know, how does the public get engaged? That may be one of the levels that we're very interested in making sure everyone's there and saying, okay, let's talk about, you know, when you look at stop stations, buses, what are these things that you're really looking for, and make sure that we understand that, because that's the stage we're at, where we're looking at the next purchase of buses is.
Well, and you talked about getting the public excited. There was three examples of what a bus shelter could look like at CAM recently. And so I took a walk over there and checked them out. Can you talk about, did one win, and is that really going to be the bus shelter that we see?
That was hosted by the Raleigh Transit Authority as well as some other participants there. But we did have the three examples. We had a lot of great feedback on those. And the Transit Authority is actually looking for additional feedback. They think that we need a bit more, and we'll be deciding exactly how to receive that in the coming weeks. Will there be a winner? Yes, there will be eventually. But all of the information that the Transit Authority has received regarding those examples, whether it's functionality, whether could they be improved upon, that's really the whole purpose of that discussion. And I think it really created a dialogue that's very beneficial for everybody, because everybody has a different perspective of what's important to me at a stop. Obviously, it certainly depends on season, but it may depend upon your functional ability as well. Certainly a stop for someone that's in a wheelchair is navigated very differently than someone that may not be, or someone that's visually impaired interacts with that stop completely different than someone who is not visually impaired. I think that taking this extra time and reviewing all of those comments is going to be very helpful. We'll have some additional information on that if you check back on our website with the City of Raleigh and go to Go Raleigh. It's raleighnc.gov/transit, but we'll have additional information out there. It's been an exciting process and a great learning process as well.
And one of our listeners also asked, related to the bus shelters, how many will be added? You know, some of those bus stops just right now, they have I call them lollipop signs. I think I got that from someone in the city. I don't know if that's really their name, but lollipop signs versus, you know, an actual stop that, you know, has a shelter and some other things you can see it. How many of those are they all going to be upgraded?
So we have about 1,300 bus stops currently in the system, and that's just with our existing services that we provide. We have a threshold. We currently require 25 boardings a day for a shelter and 10 for a bench. And we are just meeting our shelter threshold. We're entering the last phases, about 30 to 40 facilities, and we'll be finished up with that and then going into the bench phases. With that said, that would cover probably about half of all of the stops in the system if you use that criteria. Mm-hmm. So not every single stop in the system will always have a shelter or a bench, because it may have very low ridership. It may be a situation that's a very important stop, but it just has low ridership. It may serve a population such as seniors or persons with disabilities. They don't have a very large number of riders, and we can go in there and make some flat work types of improvements and not put up the shelter or the bench, depending upon the situation, quite honestly. But generally, you're not going to have a shelter or bench at every site, but just completely overhauling everything that we have out there that meets that minimum standard, which is subject to change in the future.
Of course.
especially with the routes changing, you know, people might change where they catch the bus and everything. And speaking of the routes, I think one thing people are really excited about is bus rapid transit. So what are some of the first steps for that part of the plan?
Tim, you want to kick that off?
Oh, I'll go ahead and kick it off, and then David can follow through, because they're going to be in so many of the Raleigh-specific corridors.
Yeah.
So some of the things that we're doing, and I think that, you know, the stuff we've been talking about exactly about how to study the stops and how to look at the architectural details and the design characteristics of the stops, and even then the what the conversation does. So, you know, a lot of stuff that we'll be using is the phrase study. And, you know, like, well, what have you been doing for the past, you know, 18 months or longer than that? If we now get the funding, why do you need to study again? And what we're really trying to do is we're really trying to ask a more specific community question, and then get the different levels of engagement in the different people. So when we talk about something as simple as a bus stop, we can find that when you ask different people about it, you get different answers, and that's the dialogue we need to have. That's the level of detail that we need to get to. So we can kind of ratchet that up for what we're going to be doing on the BRT studies. We've got some corridor studies. We've got a lot of really good work done on them. But now we need to be getting in and saying, okay, what do we know? What do we need to know? And what is the process for getting us to those aspects? And then we'll be getting in and saying, okay, let's talk about, can we do this sort of improvement? Can we do that sort of improvement? Ultimately, the plan is going to be that we're trying to make sure that we're doing the right elements to support the corridors that are identified in the plan with better transit service, more reliable transit service, more comfortable transit service, you know, and basically build from there towards what BRT means to us. In a lot of cases, we're looking to have at least 50% dedicated lanes to meet the federal criteria. But again, that's going to be something that we're going to be working with the community over the next couple of months and couple of years on, trying to figure out exactly what the right fit of BRT in each of the different elements.
So one of our listeners, speaking of the BRT stuff, was curious specifically about New Bern Avenue. And the listener was like, well, so you're going to dedicate one of those lanes for the bus and then the cars lose out? Or how does that work with those kind of decisions?
Well, certainly, I think Tim alluded to earlier that that will be part of the decision-making process through the pre-planning. We do not know yet which portions of the corridors will have dedicated lanes and which ones may be mixed right-of-way. New Bern Avenue currently has two lanes outbound and two lanes inbound to downtown, but also is a very wide corridor. It's one of the largest corridors in Raleigh as far as existing right-of-way. So there's lots of opportunity there for really multimodal uses, whether that's bike, ped, transit, traditional automobile. So really this planning process up front, which is going to take a little bit of time, but we're going to determine what's the important sections for us to build out first. And then also, obviously, a big part of that is determining which ones are going to have those dedicated lanes. And really, that's pushed by travel time savings. How much time can we actually save by having that dedicated lane, so that a 15-minute trip or a 18-minute trip downtown maybe is we can get that lane, and that's comparable on a bus or possibly even faster. That's sometimes challenging, but those things can be done in some areas.
So our last big topic is commuter rail, and this part is really, I'm imagining, going to take the longest. Can you talk to us about the process for that? What are some of the studies that need to happen that you were sort of discussing earlier?
But essentially, it's very similar, right, where you have to know what we need to know. We need to know exactly how we're going to approach it. The plan essentially has set aside certain dollar amounts for a specific type of service, but we need to explore whether that's the best thing for our community. And so it's basically working with our partners to explore all the different options and making sure that the community is explicitly saying, yeah, this is something that's of high value to us. There's a lot of challenges. I know you all were talking about it, I think, on your last podcast, where you're talking about, well, the first question we all need to ask ourselves when we talk about any particular improvement, the commuter rail included, is, would I use it? It's not necessarily the end-all, be-all question, because you may not be the target market for any particular type of improvement, but it is something that we all need to kind of do a gut check on, because you can't just wish that these things are going to occur. And what we're going to be doing is doing some of those elements. So once we get together some of the technical details, we're going to get in more of the community-driven things and essentially say, what is the right type of investment as we move forward? And essentially, that's the studies we have programmed in the next couple of months.
So based on that, when do you think it's going to be operational? I mean, it could be, I guess the plan talked about 10 years, but does that mean I'm going to be riding the train in 10 years? Or
So there is a possibility that that's what's going on, and we could see that, and that's one of the things that the plan is going to be working forward on. But again, it's not going to short circuit the community and the planning processes that we need to go to make sure that we make the right investment plan.
Right.
Basically has its overarching goals that we know we want to, you know, connect to different areas, but we want to make sure that we're doing those things in appropriate ways and financially using the, you know, the public's money in the correct way. You know, there are some ways that we could potentially invest in, you know, commuter rail and either meet that 10-year time frame or actually bring it in a little bit quicker than that. But there's also some options that we can potentially choose that would take slightly longer than that. And again, that's where we want to be, make sure that we're very honest with the community. But we'll, that's what the studies will be for. But again, the plan's goal is to bring it in within the 10-year time.
Okay. And we had sort of touched a little earlier on technology improving so rapidly with transit. Is it possible within that 10-year time frame that technology will get to the point where maybe commuter rail isn't really one of the better options for something in Wake County, for Raleigh? I think that was one of the concerns I've heard, is that we don't need commuter rail. You know, we like the bus rapid transit, we like all these other aspects, but why do we need a train here? Is it possible that 10 years down the line you might say, well, you know, looking at the technology we have now, looking at these new buses and all these other options we have, is commuter rail still something we're going to do?
Yeah, I think the technology question is one that we feel like we're really well prepared for, or as prepared as you can for what's going to be likely a fundamentally changing, you know, the way we get around.
Right.
And I think one of the things, the first responses that you need to say is that, you know, when you talk about the ideal option of when things are going to occur, you're probably looking at a 20-year time frame. One of the things we're already being told is, well, 10 years is too long, you know, we want stuff tomorrow, you know, and so to some extent what we don't want to do is be standing still unnecessarily. The other thing is to take into account that many of the modifications that occur on the, you know, vehicle side also occur on the transit side,
right.
And so therefore, you know, automated trains are the same thing, you're, you know, basically the same technology as any sort of other automated vehicle. What we don't know is exactly how that's going to evolve. And so what we want to do is, and that's why one of the reasons that we do these studies and we have these community conversations, is that, you know, everything has a cost, everything has a value, and we want to make sure that we're in the right place from the community standpoint. So, you know, your question, if certain things go certain ways, the answer would have to be yes, but if certain things go other ways, then you have to say, well, why would we not?
Pretty hard to speculate that.
Right, right.
But
why would we leave this extremely valuable type of tool on the table?
Right.
If, you know, a certain set of assumptions goes in. And so that's where we've got the plan is set up that way. But then the further stuff that we do is going to essentially try to make sure that we didn't necessarily put blinders on your question, on the question of technology either. And say, no, the plan said we have to do this.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's what this is all about.
Okay. So this has been a lot of information. And obviously we just kind of skimmed the surface because there's so much more. We kind of talked and joked about at the start of this, how you guys could, I mean, you're transit guys, so you could probably spend all day talking about this. But obviously there's a lot more coming. So if I'm interested in transit in Raleigh and Wake County and I want to keep up to date with what you guys are up to, how do I do that? Is just waketransit.com?
So like Tim stated earlier, certainly waketransit.com. It's going to give you all the details on the plan itself. A good background on how we got to where we are today. If you want to see what's happening on literally sometimes on a weekly basis with the plan, you can go to the Capital Area MPO and just click on CAMPO there and type in TPAC, which is Transportation Planning and Advisory Committee, and it brings up all of the information that's happening on a weekly, like I said, sometime weekly basis in regards to moving this plan forward now into implementation.
Yeah, and I think on the studies as we move forward into the types of things we were talking about where we're really trying to get that community input, there will be specific ask on specific questions, and so that will be related to those websites, but then there'll be specific advertisements for here's, you know, when we're going to be talking about this element as we move forward. So there's going to be a lot of different aspects of for public involvement. What we don't want to do is always stay at that high level, right? Or we say, well, we just want to know generally what your thoughts are on transit. What we want to do is kind of gel down to those questions where we really are talking about things that we care about and where we start to see the differences, how different people react to different things so that we can find the right place.
Yeah, because you're both talking about, it seems like a big part of this process right now in the immediate future is going to be public feedback, public input. And one thing I think the city does very well is they hold a lot of public information sessions on basically every plan the city puts together. There's 20 meetings, you know, across 2 years for it, and you can go out to them all the time, and it's great. Are these going to be local? how hyper local are these? Are they like the citizen advisory committee level, or is it going to be citywide meetings?
I was talking to someone earlier, and I was talking about public participation with this plan, and I almost think about it in three phases. We really had that public participation process when the plan was developed.
Yeah.
That got us to the development of the Wake plan itself. As we go in and start looking at our major investments and defining or really prioritizing our short-range transit plan and what will be rolled out when, we'll have another public engagement, but it'll kind of be what I call medium tier.
Okay.
And then once we make those decisions, and I think this is what you were talking about, and we start impacting neighborhoods and specific routes and whether that might be an addition of service or even if a route might come off of a neighborhood street and go to a primary corridor, but it runs every 15 minutes instead of once an hour.
Yeah.
That's important information for us to get to those residents. So we would really go drill down. And like you said, really at the CAC or at a community level, want to make sure that we got that input the best we can before a final rollout is made of that service. So a couple of more iterations of public participation processes to come before these services actually hit the street.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we just want to always have is that everybody approaches transit and the transit investment from different areas, and it really is this community dialogue that's going to be very important as we move forward because it's the balance that we're looking for. And again, we touched on that, but again, it can't be reiterated enough in the fact that it's, you know, just because you have a certain perspective doesn't necessarily mean that everyone else is looking at it the same way. And it's, always very challenging to find the right place.
Well, thank you, Tim and David, so much for joining us today to talk about the next steps. We're going to be following this a lot on this podcast, I'm sure,
yeah.
In the coming years, assuming we keep going. So check out, you can check out the links that they mentioned. I'm going to put those in our notes on inboundraleigh.com. And of course, we want to hear your feedback about the show. Please email us at inboundraleigh@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at those handles. So thanks again, and we'll catch you next time.